Hello and welcome to Argue the Toss at GameIndustry.com. I'm Shella.
And I'm Drew, and together we're arguing about the things that really matter in games and films and stuff.
Indeed we are, and it is Season 4, Episode 23.
Indeed it is.
And what's our topic this time, Drew?
Well, I can tell you what it was supposed to be. we were going to cover the new Coen Brothers film, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which has been released, I think, theatrically in America and on Netflix everywhere, which is sort of a strange kind of release pattern. Mm-hmm. But I kind of forgot that we were going to do that and I didn't watch the film. So I'm sorry about that. So what we're going to do instead is talk about... because we did watch Burn After Reading a couple of weeks back together. So we thought we'd do a kind of Coen Brothers retrospective and talk about the films we like, the things we like and dislike about the Coen Brothers and why they're kind of... They're kind of such a mainstay in our film watching.
So we've kind of divided it up into sort of the key elements. Like what? Because you watch a Coen Brothers film and you know it's a Coen Brothers film. It's like it hits these certain things, and like they have different kinds of films within the Coen Brothers sort of oeuvre. So some of them hit all the points, some of them hit, you know, more than others and things like that. So we've kind of got this, I kind of devised this list of, you know, the things that make a Coen Brothers film. And the first thing I've put on the list was high body count.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true.
I think Fargo, although looking at the list, it could be Raising Arizona could be the first Coen Brothers film I watched. But I think in Fargo, it was just like the body count's pretty high and it's quite dramatic.
Yes.
The wood chipper.
The wood chipper, yeah. Everyone remembers the wood chipper. And there's... I can't remember if it's in the original film or if it's in the series where one of them goes under the ice as well. And I think that's the series, actually. But
yeah, it might be. Yeah, they kind of carry on. They play with that really well, don't they?
Yes.
The sort of, like, numerous deaths. But, Burn After Reading is another one with that high body count. And No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, certainly. That takes it a bit more seriously than the other two, yeah.
Yeah, it does.
I mean, it's not true of every film. I mean, Hail Caesar doesn't have much of one. Inside Llewyn Davis, not so much. But yeah, it's definitely in some of their earlier work.
Yeah, it's like a feature of when they're doing a crime one. That is one of the things that they sort of, they go all out kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it was the first thing that came to mind. Because I suppose Fargo is probably the first film that people think of, the Coen Brothers.
Kind of the prototypical.
Yes, the one that most people know, especially now with the TV show. Yes. Which I think has been really good because it sounded like a terrible idea to make a series of Fargo because it's just such a perfect film. Mm. But they've done it brilliantly.
Yeah, it is kind of a testament to their style that I think the Coen Brothers do serve as executive producers on Fargo, but they're not actually involved in it.
No,
but that series does the Coen Brothers so well.
It really does.
Really homes in on what's very funny about watching films like Fargo and The Big Lebowski, and their farces. So Burn After Reading more than The Big Lebowski. It's kind of clear and emulatable. I think they've done a really good job with that series.
I haven't seen
the third season.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Oh yeah, I really enjoyed that one. I enjoyed them all. For different reasons, yeah. So the next thing I had on my list was is the hapless protagonist, which is something they use a lot as a sort of narrative mechanic kind of thing. And it's kind of like this Graham Greene sort of Our Man in Havana style thing. So if you don't know Our Man in Havana, it's about a vacuum cleaner salesman who gets mistakenly identified as some kind of double agent, and so he has all these people after him. And it's my favourite Graham Greene book. It's brilliant. And yeah, the Coen brothers use that technique a lot of the sort of like Barton Fink is this sort of screenwriter and Burn After Reading, like these people just who are like aerobics instructors. And even with Fargo, the sort of the complexity of the crime is often because someone is involved who shouldn't be, and it's all accidental, and so it makes no sense whatsoever. They're just really good at doing that.
I think that Fargo does that really well, in that it sort of contrasts William H. Macy's character, who is kind of, he wants to do something bad, but he's just far too hapless to pull it off. And then you've got that contrasted against Frances McDormand's character, who appears hapless and very folksy at the beginning, and then immediately she kind of homes in, she's like, okay, actually she's very smart, and she's defying the appearance of it.
Fargo's really good at that. Making the person you expect to be incompetent like really competent, and just sort of dogged and sort of true, and all those things. Any others that would go into the hapless protagonist?
I mean, the Big Lebowski, I suppose, sort of fits into it. The dude is,
I haven't seen that, so.
Ah, fair enough. Jeff Bridges' character, he's less hapless than he is just very relaxed about everything. It's a very interesting film. We'll have to watch that one together, because it is one of my favourites. But he kind of plays a very large guy who's drawn into a sort of noirish private eye sort of story, and he has no experience in doing this. His friend, who is kind of along with him for the ride, he's a complete idiot and sort of messes up a lot, and every time the dude tries to do some real investigation, the universe just kind of shuts him down. It's a really interesting film to watch.
You've actually sold me on that film, it's got bowling in it, and the fact that he's called the dude just has forever put me off, and the fact that all the pictures are of him just in his bathrobe. And I was just like, I'm not sure I want to. So I've never got round to it.
But there's a lot of kind of, I think you would be interested in it. There's a lot of kind of stuff written about the character of the dude, and there's a philosophy that is taken off because of his character, and people compare him with like the Zen master in a kind of tongue in cheek way. It is worth watching. More for the, I think I'm less interested in it for the character than the kind of, it's 90s Americana, and the bowling and the. It's really good, and I'd recommend it to anybody. I got kind of obsessed with it back when it was kind of a big thing on the internet for a while. The Big Lebowski was kind of, it was one of those things that was, you had to like it.
It's one of those cult things which kind of put me off as well, because it's like there's all this weight of you're supposed to like it, so that kind of stopped me from watching it too. But it sounds interesting, so. Yeah, I'm up for that.
We should definitely do that. So where were we? Hapless protagonists. So we mentioned Burn After Reading.
Which I think that has my favourite ones.
Yes, it's a bunch of them. It's like,
I know, there's so many to choose from.
Yeah, it's just a concatenation of hapless people coming together from the CIA, Oswald Cox, the CIA analyst, and then just Frances McDormand being this very kind of chipper and well-meaning but just very stupid character.
Yeah, just like obsessed as well. She has her very clear goal. And George Clooney, everybody, it's so brilliant. And then, of course, Brad Pitt doing his tour de force and just lapping up that role. I just love how happy he is to be in that film.
There's nobody in that film who's not having a lot of fun.
A really good time. Yeah, it's so good. It's such a great film. Even though, everybody dies, it's a really happy film.
Yes, it is.
So it fulfills on high body count and hapless protagonist to the max, basically. It's great. I guess we should then, we've touched on farce, so like farce with dark humour, and these are probably the ones I haven't seen so much. I mean, there's always an element of farce, but you were saying Hail Caesar is probably a good example of this. I haven't seen that one. Is that?
Yes, it's been a while since I saw Hail Caesar. That's less of a farce. It's more of a kind of satire of 1950s movie
Oh,
making.
like the old Hollywood
Yes,
studio
exactly.
system, kind of.
Yes.
Okay.
So
Okay.
it's good to see if you're told. Like it would be a good follow up to say watching Sunset Boulevard or something. I think at the time I kind of wasn't. I went in expecting something a bit different to what it was, so I didn't enjoy it as much when I went to see that in the cinema. I need to come away and watch it on Blu-ray and see what I think and reassess it, I think. But it's interesting, and I can't remember much about it except Channing Tatum is in it, and he does a very
Good.
interesting dance scene on the side of a submarine, which I
Excellent.
couldn't tell you the context. I just remember it visually, but.
I like Channing Tatum a lot. I like the way his career has gone. It's good. But so ones that are good examples of the sort of farcical element. Well, Burn After Reading
I think
definitely
I think
is
that's the king of Coen Brothers
Coen
farces.
Brothers for, yeah.
Fargo certainly fits into that as well,
Yeah.
and The Big Lebowski not so much. I think probably The Lady Killers does, although it's obviously it's taking off a much older and much better farce. We were talking about this briefly before the podcast. You think you didn't like the Coen Brothers Lady Killers?
No,
I
not at all.
kind of sort of did, but yeah, it's not as good as the first one, and I wouldn't watch it before
No.
the first one, but I thought it's worth seeing a different take on that material.
Oh, brother, where art thou?
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou is
I'd say that's a
it's
farce.
pretty farcical. It's
Yeah.
it's I mean that I th again we were mentioning this before. I think that's either the first or second Coen Brothers film I saw, and I saw that with my dad, and we kind of fell in love with it. He bought the soundtrack. It was
Yeah.
just listening to that for a couple of years afterwards.
Yes, I don't like that film. I
No.
just no, I don't know what it is about it, because yeah, everybody else liked it a lot more than I did, and I think a lot of the people who do like it really liked the soundtrack, which is, fair enough. It looked beautiful and it had some beautiful moments and everything, but I just felt like it was this George Clooney vehicle that, and it was just like, yeah, this George Clooney in my face sort of for like 2 hours or whatever it is. And one of the things I liked about The Ballad of Buster Scruggs is, even though it had this phenomenal cast, it never felt like the stars were outshining the characters they were playing. So yeah, I mean, it could have just been the tone of Oh Brother Where Art Thou, and the fact that he was what's the guy who played Rhett Butler? He was doing that kind of look and thing, and yeah, that was getting on my nerves, and yeah, it just didn't, just wasn't for me.
I guess no. I found that I found him really good. I don't think he. No, looking back on it, I suppose yeah, he does kind of. He is kind of the very main thing in it. And he does kind of. He kind of out. What was the way you put it? Outsteps the.
Yeah, sort of outshines the
Yeah,
character.
outshine. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think at the time I hadn't seen him doing much in the way of comedy work, so it was interesting to see him doing something else. He'd just been, sort of. I mean, unless you count Batman and Robin, which is pretty comic. But no, I really liked him, and I really liked. I thought that all three of them were pretty great. Tim Blake Nelson and John Turturro playing the kind of trio of just complete idiots, and yeah, it was just the look of it, the feel of it, the soundtrack, and just the
Yeah.
atmosphere,
Yeah, it's that sort of Three Stooges almost style. Yeah, I just yeah,
Yeah.
it's I understand why other people like it. I just don't, yeah, it's not for me, that one. But a good example, I think, of their farce, their
Yes.
farcical humour. I can't remember how dark the humour is, because I can't really remember it.
I mean, it's a fairly light-hearted film. I think they
Yeah.
like yeah. There's the darkest thing that happens is there is a Klan rally in it, but it's all played for laughs. So yeah.
So the other big sort of umbrella term is, I've put it as like America's broken dream. There's this, it's like, because it's all steeped in Americana, no matter what setting they pick, '50s Hollywood studio system or the Wild West, or quite often there's like mob, sort of mob culture in there, or it's small town America kind of, so there's this sort of Americana element to them, that's, and No Country for Old Men, True Grit, obviously Buster Scruggs falls into that, Oh Brother and Miller's Crossing all sort of deal with that kind of
Yeah,
theme of the
there are no
dark underbelly of America.
exactly. There are no films that I well, certainly not that I've seen, which don't have an investigation of a certain part of America, specifically American culture, as a major theme throughout the film. But yeah, they are film. They are making films about America.
Yeah, they definitely are.
Yeah.
I think, did you see True Grit?
I did not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a really beautiful film, but yeah, it doesn't, it's one of those that doesn't have that Coen Brothers feel to it. I don't think, it's their sort of serious movie, I think. And it was nominated, and the lead actress won an Oscar. I can't remember if they won anything else. Yeah, it's really beautiful, but doesn't have any of the other things that we really kind of, as far as I remember. I mean, I could be forgetting something because I haven't seen it since it came out at the cinema. Yeah, it's definitely their serious sort of grown up one, I think.
Like, I mean, is it like a serious Western or is it a serious film that happens to be a Western? Because I've seen
Well,
like the original. I've seen bits
yeah.
of the original.
So it's both of those things,
Okay.
because obviously it's, whether it's a remake of the original film or of the book that it was all based on. Yeah, it is just a serious, beautiful bit of cinema, basically. But yeah, it doesn't really have that. I don't remember that kind of Coen Brothers-esque feel to it, in terms of the things we've discussed otherwise. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. And then No Country for Old Men is probably their bleakest, though, isn't it? We were talking
Yes.
about this. Just like almost nobody gets out alive or
No.
happy in that one. But I loved that film so much. It was so tense. What's his name? Bardem was just
Yeah.
an incredible antagonist in that. You can just feel he's relentless. He's like Terminator. He's just, yeah, he's just, yeah, I love that film so much. And then it does have the sort of slightly, it has the hapless protagonist thing in it, the sort of aging cop, and then the people
Yeah.
who find the guy who finds the bag of money, but it's just got this darkness, this
Yeah.
like that's pursuing them like relentlessly. It's really good. I loved that film so much. Yeah, and then I suppose Buster Scruggs is, these vignettes, this anthology of Wild West stories, and it's all framed as stories from a book.
Right.
Yeah, so each story begins with a page opening in a book, and you can read the text from the book, the opening chapter, and it has a color plate to go with the story. And then it sort of fades in through the color plate to,
Oh, that's interesting.
yeah, it is. It's really beautifully framed. And then when that story ends, the book op you back to the book, and it's the final page in the final chapter of the book, and you can read, and then he, walked over the brow of the hill but did not know what he would say to, and all this sort of thing as the characters fade out and it goes, turns the page to the next story. So yeah, it's really lovely the way it's all framed like that. And of course, it's the big open skies of America. It looks stunning. I mean, when the Coen brothers do go to the Wild West, they really do it beautiful. I mean, all of their films are like Fargo. When they film America, it always looks stunning. Because like some of the framing in Fargo is incredible. Like really iconic, the big sort of aerial shots of that, lone figures in the snow and stuff like that. And Buster Scruggs is, yeah, absolutely stud, like just all the time just gasping at the landscape, basically. Looks beautiful. Yeah.
I really regret not having seen that now. That's probably a proper good episode of that. It feels like.
Yeah, and I watched it as episodes. I watched it over a couple of sittings, and there were a few people who said they wished they'd done that. So I recommend kind of breaking it up. Yeah, it was, yeah, it's just because the night I started watching it, I got tired. So I was just like, oh, I'll just watch the other ones. And yeah, so it's kind of perfect for Netflix because you can resume where you left off. So it's perfect in that way. Yeah, and you just, it doesn't lose anything from having a break and then going back to it. Yeah.
More we're saying, more films should have intermissions.
Yes. Yeah. So yeah, I think most of the ones under this American Dream one are ones I've seen and you haven't, and then you've seen more of the other ones. Yeah, because the other one that falls into that is Miller's Crossing. And yeah, they are more of their more serious ones apart from Oh Brother, that kind of fall into that more. Yeah, so Miller's Crossing is just, like a mob movie. But yeah, once again, really, it's a completely different era for them. Yeah, because they don't really do, because they do like Wild West, or they do pretty contemporary, don't they? Like sometimes they'll go to the 50s or something, but yeah, this is different because I think it's during Prohibition type era. So the 20s or 30s or something. So yeah, and it's just a really good mob movie. Again, it's a serious one. Doesn't have, I can't remember any element of farce or hapless protagonist in that, really, unless I'm completely forgetting something. But yeah. Yeah, it's quite a hard, because that's based, isn't that based on a graphic novel, Miller's Crossing? I'm pretty sure.
Could be.
I thought, yeah. Yeah, I don't know why I'm asking
Nope.
you.
No, I don't know.
So yeah, so are there any that we've missed so far, films that you've watched that I haven't, that.
Not really. We didn't really talk about Inside Llewyn Davis for
Oh yeah.
much, which we were, I was gonna put under as one of their ones, which is definitely investigating a certain kind of a very kind of specific slice of American culture, which is kind of
Yeah.
it's like 1960s folk music, isn't it? It's
Yeah.
and you watched you said earlier you watched it without knowing it was a Coen Brothers film,
Yes.
which I can kind of understand because it doesn't kind of wear any of their hallmarks
No.
particularly kind of on its sleeve. But yeah, no, I remember really enjoying that film as well, and just again, it was for me for that one, it was the soundtrack rather than maybe the film itself, which I did enjoy, but I then went out and bought the CD and had that on for the next month or so.
Okay, and that's Oscar Isaacs, isn't it? Oscar
Yes, it
Isaac.
is.
That guy is, because I only found that out yesterday when I was just scanning through
Chameleon.
Coen Brothers films for this, and I was just like, that guy is a chameleon. He's incredible. Like, He looks so different every time I see him. It's just, I love him. He's like such a great new actor we've got.
Yes. Like, yeah, and I watched this sort of. This was quite early on in his kind of rise, wasn't it? So he did Ex Machina and this, and then I think Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Yes.
And like he looks so different in all of them.
Yeah.
It, yeah, it sort of took me a while to figure out that Ex Machina guy was the same guy as Poe. It's just like, wow, yeah.
Yeah, he does drift between those are three very, very different characters, and
Right.
two of them are very specific and different kinds of asshole, and then there's Poe, who
Yes.
is, not an asshole at all.
No, he's
So
like a
yeah,
likable kind of, yeah.
he has huge range.
He really does, yeah, I can't remember that much about that film. It's kind of like the story of Bob Dylan type thing, isn't it? That sort of like, yeah, but he is just, yeah, the worst boyfriend ever or ex-boyfriend ever. It's like you're just like, oh God, yeah, I can see why you dumped him
This
kind of
is
guy. Yeah. But yeah, again, one of their just more serious kind of just indie film type ones. Yeah.
it's just a bit more existential and a bit quieter and a bit more introspective, and I just really like it for that, because I think I can't really remember the details of the kind of journey he goes on either, but by the time you get to the end of that film, it just loops back and starts again. Like it didn't matter anyway what happened. It was always just going to come round and round full circle. And
Yeah.
yeah, I just thought that was a like it stuck with me for a while after watching that.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, I watched it on a plane, so yeah, not much sticks with you
No.
on a plane experience. Yeah, I should probably give it another go. Yeah, so then the last section I had for Coen Brothers is the whiteness of the worlds they set their stories in. Yeah, and we were saying that The Ballad of Buster Scruggs has definitely brought this to the front of people's minds when looking at their works more critically. I think they've gotten away with this for a long time without anybody mentioning, hey, why don't you cast some black characters or anyone who's not white? Yeah, but Buster Scruggs is. It doesn't do. I was waiting for the one story that was going to be from the perspective of the indigenous people, and it never came. Instead, they perpetuated the idea of Native Americans as dangerous, othered enemies, sort of taking scalps, raping women, the sort of savage outsider, which was really disappointing. Yeah, it's and it just kind of shines a light on, the rest of their work being so starkly white. Sort of Burn After Reading is set in Washington,
Is
D.C., which has,
extremely white film.
but in a city that is, majority black. So they could have easily just changed one of those characters. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? Yeah, I just felt like, because isn't it set in the South?
It is, yes, in the deep south for.
And there's not, and they, I felt like they used the spirituals and the culture of blackness without really having any significant black characters in there, or
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah, so it's a bit of a shame, but what can you
No,
do?
yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah, no real counterpoint there.
Just
I don't
yeah.
have anything to add to that except that, yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think
Yeah.
I think with the Buster Scruggs, it's been scrutinized more than it usually would have been, although maybe not, but I get the feeling that because this has been released on Netflix and on the internet, it's kind of been released into Twitter and it's been released into social media in a way that it wouldn't have been if it was just a big cinema release.
Yeah.
And I think it's getting more scrutiny because of that, which is good. It's getting... Mm-hmm. It's in the discourse now.
Yeah. I just can't believe that they didn't... I just think it's such a huge oversight on their part, as storytellers of that setting. Just what were they think? Well, they obviously weren't thinking, I don't know if they've got this we're just two white guys, so we can't write the indigenous or black or non-white experience, but. They write women sometimes, and you know, it's like, yeah. I was really disappointed in that because I really enjoyed that film, but then I got to the end and I was just like, oh, they didn't. didn't bother. And in fact, the last one is A, the weakest, and B, kind of plays on that fear again. So you're just left on a pretty kind of sour note, which is a shame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there we go.
Yeah.
So they kind of sit in the Wes Anderson camp of unbearably white filmmakers.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll take some of the criticism and see it as something to work on.
Yeah. One hopes.
Yes. Anything to add? We've ended on a pretty sour note. Yeah. What about our favorite?
I was trying to narrow this down. I don't think I have a particular favorite. When we were watching the Burn After Reading, in the moment that was my favorite. It is so funny, and I think it's by far the funniest film that they've done. I don't think everyone agrees on that. I don't think Burn After Reading is generally considered the best of their oeuvre. But
really,
wow,
it's
one of their lesser Coen Brothers films. I think that's the opinion of it.
Wow,
that
surprises me.
So it's somewhere between that, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, and The Big Lebowski. I don't want to say Fargo because I like Fargo, but it's kind of the baseline I have for the Coen Brothers. It's not one I go back to and watch. It's so familiar.
Yeah. And it's become this kind of cultural sort of touchstone. You know, you can do a Fargo kind of shot and things like that. I agree. I think mine... I've got two because they do such different tones in their films that I couldn't pick between them. So it is Burn After Reading and No Country for Old Men, just to span their entire tonal spectrum.
Well, those films came out one after the other, so
did they?
Yeah, it was like a pretty hard switch on their part.
So, I just love both those, but... It might just be pipped by Burn After Reading, because you can probably watch it more. I just love that film so much. It's so funny.
Yeah, but Burn After Reading is one of those ones where I will go back and just watch one scene from it that has just popped into my head. So look on YouTube, it's that scene there. And it's usually the ending scene. Like, if you haven't seen Burn After Reading, go and watch it, because the ending scene, I think, it's my favourite closing scene in cinema, because it summarizes the film so well, and in such a funny and well-performed way.
It's so well written, that film. I can't imagine why it's not celebrated. You know, I suppose it's sort of accessible mainstream. I suppose perhaps that's why it's not arty enough.
Yeah,
but if it's
It's also one of those films which I think you have to know what you're getting into to really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Which is a problem I had, like, the first time I watched The Big Lebowski, I didn't really like it because I didn't really... I'd gone in expecting something different and wasn't able to adjust to what, like, The Big Lebowski was trying to do.
Mm.
I think once you've watched Burn After Reading once and know what the sense of humour of it is, when you go back and watch it again and watch it in that context, it is constantly hitting those notes and hitting them really well.
Yeah, it does. It's just so well structured and written, performed, and I love George Clooney in it. Whereas I said, you know, I didn't enjoy him in Oh Brother. I just think he's just perfect in that. He's perfectly cast as that sort of like cad sort of almost gigolo kind of guy preying on women, and yeah, just all of them. I love it so much. It's great. There are films we haven't seen. The Coen brothers have made a lot of films.
Yeah.
So ones we haven't seen that maybe we need to like sort of patch up those gaps. The one is The Man Who Wasn't There.
Yeah.
Is that what it's called? Yeah, I have seen that, but it was so long ago. I watched it when it came out, and I remember absolutely loving it. Mm. And I watched the trailer just now, and it is beautiful. And I love Billy Bob Thornton in pretty much anything. Mm. And he's the star of that. And that's probably their most noirish as well. It has a court case and a mystery and everything. But yeah, if I could remember it, that would probably be somewhere in my favourites, I think.
Yeah.
I need to watch that again.
Yeah, we'll have to do a season.
Yeah, we'll have to do a season of watching the ones we haven't seen already.
Yeah.
Or ones we haven't seen for a while. Okay, so... that was us looking at Coen Brothers films and a little bit of Buster Scruggs.
Yes. Sorry again.
But yeah, so that's us. Let us know, what's your favourite Coen Brothers film? Are there any other directors you'd like us to look at? I've enjoyed this. It's quite fun looking at a bunch of films from one director. Yeah, maybe we can do a Hitchcock one or something. We both like Hitchcock.
That would be cool. It's been a while since I went on a Hitchcock kick. And...
Yeah. Always a good one. But that's Are You the Toss this time. Until next time, Drew.
Cheerio.